A slightly more robust snap from the always healing Pendulette here on the CBS Free FM. Sitting across from me is Michael Goudeau. And,
miracle worker.
Yeah. We got a letter. The phone number, in case you want to call. You can really always, I give a topic, you know, that you're supposed to talk about. But always, if you've got a good call off topic, we'll always take it. 866-570-PEN. That's 7366. 866-570-PENN, which is 7366. PENradio@gmail.com. PENradio.com. That's always PEN with two N's. You know, a few days ago, Two days ago. We did a thing from the New York Times. We got it about gay sheep, gay rams, and this guy who was working on doing studies on that, and how PETA and who's the tennis star whose name I can't say?
Navratilova.
We're all flipping out, just flip city over how awful this was to cure homosexuality. Well. There's this basic truth in the world that the newspaper is right about everything unless you know anything about the story. And it's very disheartening. When I first got into show business, I really believed it was in the newspapers. I believed the reporting. And then they started doing stories about me, and they were always wrong. So for a while I believed, oh, newspapers can't write correct stuff about me.
But
and
everything
I'm not,
else, yeah.
I'm not talking about, I don't want to tell you, people think I'm talking about bad reviews. Those were correct. What I'm talking about is, you know, height, day, length of, you know, real
none
provable
of the actual
things.
Facts.
So now, as I got to meet scientists that were written about, you know, friends of mine, there'd be a story on them, and they'd call them, tell me, oh, by the way, everything's wrong. So what I thought was funny is Jim Newman is from the Oregon Health and Science University, one of the universities conducting the sheep study you mentioned earlier this week on your show. Now, the sheep study was about putting electrodes. One out of 10 rams tries to mount another ram. So one out of 10 rams is what we would call gay, although rams aren't bothered by pejoratives. They don't care what you call them. They just want to mount a ram. And they're trying to put, you know, so that they will they will have sex with. You know, that's the thing. Is you get too comfortable on the air. I said have sex with. I almost said something that would make them dump it in New York. And we've been over a year now, right? Have sex with ewes, as they're called, female sheep. And we talked about that, made a lot of jokes about ram horns and ramming and, you know, the usual garbage that guys like us would do when you give us a radio show and keep it on the air for too long. I don't mean an hour a day, I mean over a year. So we just keep, you know, condom of choices, Ramses, do all any joke you can do. And blah, 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 blah. And that's what we got to do. You know, we're trying to fill up time. And then the guy, the real scientist, the no kidding around scientist, writes us an email saying that they want to set the record straight on our show. Now, this is how pathetic, the coverage of science,
the state of
in
science
the media
the
is
reporting, yes.
That this guy's best outlet for discussion of this is our show. Now, of course, there's no two people on the planet who are more pro-science than Michael Goudeau and me. I mean, we're cheerleaders for science. We can't do it. We're not smart enough. If we had gone into science full time, we'd be the guys who ran and got the donuts and coffee. That's as high up as we would have ever gotten. I'll make copies of all these files so we don't lose them. Okay. We'd be running the Xerox machine and the copy machine.
For the jobs we have, for the jobs that we have.
Exactly.
Working on a TV show, you and I go out and buy bike parts while other people work.
Exactly. We can't do anything. And this is the thing, and what I want to point out is, The people we're about to talk to on the phone, we respect tremendously. But the fact that they're willing to give us the time of day, I think is something that Americans should be up in arms at. They should not have time to talk to us. They should be able to talk to the real news outlets. So let's talk to, I believe we have on the phone, Jim Newman. Is this Jim?
That's correct. And by the way, I work in a communications office. I'm no researcher, so I'm a lowly communications person.
Okay, so you're at the level, you just had a little more love of science, so you actually put your money where your mouth is, but you're essentially making phone calls and getting donuts, right?
Exactly. You know, I write about science, but as for doing it, I leave that to other people.
But now you have it. Now you are on Free FM. You're on CBS Radio. You do have listeners.
Big time at last.
And you can talk about, just tell us how inaccurate this story is and where it is. And then while you're doing this, we'll kind of heckle you and make jokes, because that's our job.
I appreciate that. Yes, I listen to the show, so I know what I'm in for.
But go ahead.
You know, about this story is actually really old. The funny thing about the research is it's about 5 years old now. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it was in the news in the last couple of weeks is the animal rights group PETA put a press release out about 6 months ago now, and made some inaccurate claims, and ever since that time we've been spending lots of hours of our days righting the wrongs and giving people information.
And we would like to hear what inaccurate claims they made, what you think their motives were.
Sure. I mean, the worst claim that we've heard is that we're trying to cure homosexuality, which is a really awful claim to make. Mm-hmm. and it's really offensive. And you know, if you look at the research, it clearly shows that's not what the scientists were trying to do. And then there's been all of these other kind of wild conspiracy theories, like the development of a nicotine-like patch to cure homosexuality, which is, of course, a science fiction.
Yeah, where did the word, in several of the articles we read, because believe it or not, if you're listening to the show, this is very hard for you to believe, but we actually do research before the show, and several of the articles mention the word patch to cure homosexuality. And where did the word patch come from?
You know, the first time I saw that was in the Sunday Times, which I think is the story you read earlier this week.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, the Sunday Times said some expert made this suggestion, but unfortunately they didn't tell us where that expert is or who that is. So.
I'm sorry, that was me.
So there, that explains it right there.
That's just an uncredited source said maybe a patch or something. But in fairness to the New York Times, I don't know why I'm even starting to say
it. It was the Sunday Times it was not the New York Times.
Oh,
it was
right.
The Sunday Times in London.
Sunday Times in London.
Right.
In fairness to the Sunday Times, which, why would I do that? But but they were speculating a science fiction morality above and beyond and built on your study. I don't think they ever said that you
sure.
were doing patches.
The problem with that is that they jumped to that kind of conclusion by doing things like, and I don't know that they did this on purpose, but they would report some research that we did the exact opposite. For instance, there was a study testing whether a certain hormone had an influence whether an animal wanted to mate with a same-sex partner or a different sex partner, and they actually flip-flopped that study. So, they said we were trying to cure gay rams. That's actually not true, but it's also kind of flip-flopped of what was being researched.
So you were trying to make rams gay.
We were trying to see if something influenced an animal to be... Well, to prefer the same sex mate, we don't really call him gay rams.
So you were one of those guys that had the kink of mostly wanting to have sex with the straight guys. You were trying to see, let's see if we can get this ram, who's kind of a stud, to mount another ram, right?
Essentially, that was, you know, determining whether that would happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you developing a patch for that?
No.
Because we're going to get back around to gay spray in no time here. Patrick, our board op, asked a question that I kind of tried to answer in a very sloppy way. But I think it's a question that people may have about science. He asked, you know, how do you get the idea to study sexuality in rams? And I said, they're not studying sexuality in rams. They're studying the brain, and this is one way to do it.
Correct.
You can certainly answer that question better than I did. Why don't you talk about that?
That is a great question. Actually, there are scientists years ago who were also studying the same thing in human brains. Of course, these were humans that were not alive. There was a scientist named Simon LeVay who did some research years ago.
Which is a great name for a Bond villain. A much better name than yours for a Bond villain.
You know, the interesting thing, Simon LeVay is kind of the grandfather of this line of research, and he actually contacted us and let us know that, you know, he also understood that we were not doing anything sinister here or ugly, and we appreciated that. But he was studying, these human cadavers, and then we study sheep because essentially their brain size and a lot of the anatomy of the sheep brain is very similar to humans.
And why is it, I mean, I just want you to talk more about that. Why is it that you would decide whether they liked, whether they were gay or liked same-sex partnering,
sure,
or whether they liked grass that was more blue or something?
You know, it's a basic science study, so it's kind of hard to explain how basic science is versus clinical science, but it's sort of a little bit like space exploration is, you know, we look at space because we want to understand what surrounds us, we want to understand how things work, and, you know, there are studies for all different kinds of behavior and all different kinds of things that humans do. This happens to be regarding, you know, why we prefer one kind of partner versus another kind of partner, and it's just basically, you know, here's this part of the brain, how does it work, what influences it, and it's, you know, part of this huge puzzle of how the brain works.
Now, when you're studying, when you're doing science studies like this, who's paying for it?
You know, the federal government actually pays for it. It's a National Institutes of Health study. It's not a huge study. This is not a multi-million-dollar AIDS study or a cancer study. This is a very small study in a very small number of animals, and you know, with pretty small amount of funding.
And is the study still going on?
You know, the study's going on, and they're looking at some different things. But again, the funny thing about all of this is that we announced this back in 2002. In fact, I wrote the press release myself. And you know what appeared in that press release 5 years ago is about, you know, 180 degrees different than what we're seeing right now. It's sort of, you know, here's the science fiction version of what we did, and there was the science back then.
Now, you know, with people in show business, you know, when an article comes out on someone that I know, like if an article comes out on Gilbert Gottfried and I read it, I automatically know that the article is completely wrong. And I just don't take any stock in it, and I wouldn't even bother. I mean, this is the part that might surprise people. I don't even bother calling Gilbert and saying, oh, that's not true, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't even come up in conversation.
Right.
I have friends in the sciences, but I never really ask them this question. When PETA comes out and you know, calls you the bad guys for doing this kind of study, do other people in the sciences that you your colleagues, do they give you a call and say, WTF, or do they just kind of assume everything written there is wrong?
You know, we haven't heard a lot from we have heard from scientists in this field who said that, you know, of course we know this is bogus, what's the story here, and you know, and we'll kind of explain to them. But for the most part, you know, scientists know that this is not true. In fact, there's some reporters in the UK who are currently writing stories basically saying, boy, this Time story got it wrong, and here's the full story. And so, you know, those will be appearing in the next couple of days.
Now, but there is the very, very real danger that somebody in the government reads this article, probably even takes the misunderstanding that the writer had and compounds it with more misunderstanding and actually pulls your funding, right?
Right. Some senator starts voting on this.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, the good news, of course, is that it is funded by the NIH, and so the National Institutes of Health, and so they have all the paperwork in the background and the explanation for what we've done and what we've hoped to do in the future, and they can compare that to the science fiction version of things. But, you know, that, of course, is a concern that,
of course,
you always have when science is kind of portrayed in the incorrect
because it's certainly
way.
True that they got everything totally right on stem cell research.
I mean, and just, you know, silicone breast implants. I mean, yeah. We know, yeah, that this,
I mean,
it's public opinion that's going to
public
make
opinion
call.
Makes this huge difference. And you know, we try to do a show that's funny but also stays within our morality, and you know,
definitely,
you know how pro science we are.
Yeah.
And you know, you can, you know, it's perfectly okay and moral to read about a study of yours and just say, if this went to the logical conclusion, what would we think of this morally?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a perfectly okay thing to say. If we learn enough about brain chemistry that we can control it, do we want to?
That is an excellent question, and that's something that the ethicist and the scientist should all discuss. But you know, there is the important thing to state here is that this is basic science research, and you know that you shouldn't say that we shouldn't do a certain kind of research because 200 years from now it may be used for bad, because I think anything that you study nowadays could be twisted. You know, for instance, if you're studying an infectious disease, could somebody turn that into a weapon? You know, I think that's the same kind of question you can ask with almost any kind of research.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And is there any kind of study that you as a scientist, or at least as a science
fan. I'm a writer.
As a writer. So we're three science fans talking here. You know, when they talk about, you know, the bell curve and other controversial things like that, do you think that that knowledge is the end all, and that anything should be able to be studied? Would you do studies on racial differences? Would you do studies on men and women?
I think you have a great point there. I think that there needs to be public discussion. I think there needs to be ethicists need to be involved. I think you're right. I mean, it's not all science should be done. And, you know, and you should say that, you know, it's for scientific reasons, so therefore we should study this.
Well,
I think that the public should, and that's, you know, really one of the reasons that we put an international press release out 5 years ago, is that, you know, people should know what's going on in the labs that the government funds, and know what's being found. And, yes, some of the information just adds to knowledge, and some of the information is used to treat things. But this is currently the former and not the latter.
Well, you know, I was actually saying the opposite. I do believe that knowledge of the world around us is an end in itself. Mm-hmm. And if we have I think the ethicists come later in how that knowledge is used.
Yeah.
But I would put no limits on the knowledge that we find. Would you go?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I'm trying to figure out if there's something that we shouldn't be studying. But
Go
ahead. No.
I think the public should definitely be involved in the discussion about what's being studied and be aware of it. And that's the important thing.
I think they can decide where the money goes, but I don't think there should ever be anything else there to put brakes on learning something. I mean, if there's some sort of awful truth, if there's some sort of racial truth or some sort of gender truth that we politically really don't want to know, I think it's our job as a society to deal with the truth and not to preempt the truth. And we know that a lot of racial studies have just had all their funding completely and utterly pulled just because certain people politically think that information should never be gotten. And I'm one who thinks that if we could find out exactly what I guess to put it in the proper terms and not keep pushing the bad information, if we could decide what makes an animal go for same sex, and we can have all that information and lay it out, I think that's fine. I think to know all that stuff and understand it is just terrific. And then you go to the technology, and how you use technology is something that is an ethical, political, and moral question all the time, but science is never.
You know, that is an interesting point. It does make me want to mention to you that the study, you know, initially we had these claims that came out from PETA that were false, but now it's interesting that now the conservative writers across the country have picked it up. I even heard a snippet on Rush Limbaugh the other day talking about the study, and it was almost unrecognizable because what he was reporting was so different than what was actually done. But it's fascinating how the story has been both used by the left and by the right, and it's unfortunate that the facts have kind of fallen by the wayside.
Well, let's just say that this one small portion of the media, two guys in Las Vegas, are completely on the side of science and would like to get the truth out there as much as possible. I mean, I can't imagine a more pitiful situation than where the two guys in your corner, Michael Goodell and Ben Gillette.
Well, we appreciate it.
But that is what you got. Now, before we go for a break, is there anything else you want to set straight about this study, or can you give us a web address or something where people can get real information if they care about this study and want to know the truth?
Sure. The university address is probably the easiest thing. We're www.ohsu.edu, and you know, we're actually adding some new information there, so it's coming. It's not there right now, but we're actually going to have a web page that has all of the information about the study, including links to the study, so you can read them as a member of the public and verify that what we're doing is very different than what you may have heard.
And give that address once more without the initials.
OHSU.
OHSU.edu, is that right?
.edu, you got it.
And then they can go there and find out the truth, because no matter how many jokes you want to make, it's good to have the truth underneath it. Thanks so much for calling us, Jim.
All right, thanks a lot, Penn.
Thanks a lot, man.
Bye-bye.
And I don't know what we're going to talk about when we come back, but we might be talking about we'll figure out something. We'll figure out what's a lie, what's the truth right after this. 866-570-PEN, that's 7366. This is Penn Jillette and Mike Goodell on the Free FM, that's CBS Radio. Are we on the air now? Oh, good. This is Pendulette on the Big Free FM. They didn't start the theme at the beginning to me. They took one of those little middle chunks. We came in the middle of the muted trumpet solo. 866-570-PEN-7366. That was cool. I liked having him on the
air. It was great having him on, wasn't it? What a good guy.
It was very good.
Jim should call anytime.
He should call anytime. Jim, we're sending this out to you. Call anytime. Any subject you want. You know, we get a good subject. I thought he had some ins on we saw the Bush, did you watch the Bush speech?
You know, I watched part of it. I did. I had to turn it off after my fellow Americans. But
yeah, I saw none of it. But everything I see in the paper seems to say that everything we said was right. He made the monkey announcement and all of that. But
Monkey C is on its way.
Monkey C is on its way to Iraq. Good luck to Monkey C. I want to get back to
The science thing that he was mentioning, which I think is really a terrific quote, and I don't know, I can't find out who was the first person to say it, but points out that science is not a smorgasbord of ideas from which one can pick and choose. You sit down and you take what you're served. And that sums it up so well for me. You know what I mean? You don't get to pick. You know, you want antibiotics, you're going to have to take the gay ram. I'm sorry. They both come from the same source.
Yeah. 866-570-PEN-7366. I guess the pressing question is who really said that quote?
Yeah.
If you happen to know, we couldn't find that on the web. When I say we, I mean, of course, Gudo.
Right.
Could not find that.
I credit it with Rob Pike, who I thought said it first. But it's probably not Rob.
I don't know what it is. PenRadio@gmail.com. Do we get any emails coming in? I don't like to ignore the email people, you know.
Well, you know, we're still getting emails about what president's speech is going to be. So
that's the wonder of podcast, is we're actually able to time travel. We're really able to time travel. As a matter of fact, we'll do a little test here. If we are time traveling, and if you are in the future going back to the past, and you listen to this broadcast, the second you're listening to it, the instant you're listening to it, no matter when it is, please send a message to penradio@gmail.com with the time. I want to see who hears my voice right now last. Okay. I want to hear who the last person is. Because, you know, a year from now, we'll get a Gmail going, just heard your show with that Jim Newman guy. He's cool.
Exactly. I have one comment about Jim. You know, we'll get it really weeks later. It's amazing.
But we're talking about science and how true and how not true it is. Phone number is 866-570-PEN-7366. PenRadio@gmail.com. We got a few calls. Let's talk to Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, Pen. Hey, Mike. How you guys doing?
Never better, boss. Never better. How are you?
Good. Yeah, the whole science and the truth in the media, the thing really, really strikes me every time I open up a newspaper is the way they purport that global warming is this unforeseeable catastrophe that we can't do anything about, when there's actually a group of scientists that believe that CO2 emissions do nothing but cost us money, and it's not doing anything to the atmosphere, you know? We only hear the sensationalist view, and we don't really hear the truth.
You know, that it's... I am so confused. I would love to be able to find one person who could explain to me what's going on. I mean, I start to understand and I start to believe that because of, what's the word, anthropogenic?
Anthropogenic
causes, the temperature of the Earth is going up. And I read about this stuff and it talks about, you know, tenths of a degree over years. Mm-hmm. And a small amount of, ice caps melting and so on. And I kind of start to understand that. And then it gets really warm in the northeast of this country because of El Nino, that little baby who makes me crazy.
Why don't you leave us alone?
The little boy, the El Nino, the little crazy baby.
ruins our weather.
Ruins the weather.
Why do we do
this? The little bastard, El Nino. But because of that, they say it's because of El Nino, and then you go, well, okay, you're not talking about that, and then they say this is because of global warming, and I go, global warming, I never thought that was supposed to be 20 degrees. I never thought it was supposed to be 30 degrees. And then I kind of read some stuff that Al Gore says, and it kind of sort of makes sense, and then a year ago, or maybe it was a year longer, we had a hot summer in New York, and there was an op-ed piece by Al Gore saying, who can doubt global warming now? And
right.
it seems to me that I kind of understand this tenth of a degree thing and how that's happening. And then as soon as the people who say it's a tenth of a degree or so on start going, and can't you feel how hot it is? I can't feel a tenth of a degree.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, 2 years ago we had the big, huge hurricane season, and they were, oh, see, it's global warming. And this year's hurricane season was pretty flat. You know, very, very low hurricane season. No one is saying, "Well, geez, we're going into an ice age."
Did you hear the study done by the United Nations about CO2 emissions and outweighing cars, trucks, automobiles, and lawnmowers? The number one cause of emissions is cattle farming
yes.
in the world.
Yeah, there has been a lot of that. And I was out to dinner the other night with, strangely, a bunch of poker players who would certainly know a lot about global warming. And they were doubting the cattle emissions. And I did some research on it. And everything I could find says that there's a lot of cows. And, of course, your hippies who are against cows are also against cars are also against cows. But the whole thing on global warming and on the Bulls hit show the next year that comes out, season 5, we just got done writing this one. One of the things that amazes me, and what's his name, the guy that used to be with Greenpeace that we love so much?
Roger. No, Roger.
Okay. Well, the name will come to us. He's been on several. We did a whole show with him here.
We love him. And we don't know his name.
But his point is that if you are worried even slightly about CO2 emissions and pollution and global warming, you need to be the most pro-nuke guy in the world. You need to push for nuclear power.
Patrick Moore.
And he gave some sort of figure, which I will now misquote because I am part of the media. I think he said that if we increase the number...
If we added 400 nuclear power plants, we would decrease the greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. by 80%.
Yeah, it'd be the equivalent of eliminating every car, every factory, everything, just by doing nuclear power plants, which we've gotten really good at. I mean, people that were protesting the nuclear power plants of the 60s don't even know what nuclear power plants in the 21st century could be. They could be very safe and with no emissions and solve everything. So the weird thing is this kind of hippie Al Gore position, which is very anti-cars and all of this, and at the same time, very anti-nuke. I mean, you have to get power from somewhere. You don't compare nuclear power with nothing. You compare nuclear power with what?
With coal.
With coal, yeah. And coal does kill people in the plants.
Miners are dying all the time.
And people are choking all the time. So the global warming thing, I just don't know at all. If they stuck with one thing, if there was an article that said, don't pay any attention to it being hot this summer or the hurricanes, just focus on the tenth of a degree of ocean temperature, I'd kind of understand that as soon as they overstate it, you know, they lose me. They lose me completely. Just like, you know, when they say that, you know, the homeless are just regular people that had bad things happen to them and don't mention that in many cases, not in all, but in many cases, it's mental illness and drug abuse and alcohol and so on that also enter into it. I think that the truth really matters, and until you lay the truth out, you can't make any decisions. So my answer on global warming is, I don't know. I don't know.
There is no such thing as truth in the mainstream media. It's just sensationalism.
Well, the truth is so complex. Obviously, in an issue like this, you know, we've walked into the bathtub 30 seconds ago and seeing the tub drain. You know, I mean, we could say
at least it's one-sided, right? It might not be the whole truth, but they're not offering both points of view.
Mm-hmm. One side sells papers.
Well, the real important point is, and I think that this is the point I'd make the strongest, is there aren't two sides. There is no dichotomy. The truth is so complex that if you have a headline that says global warming will destroy us and another headline that says global warming no problem, neither of those make any sense at all. You know, you've got a really, really complex issue that they're trying to turn into headlines, and that's the problem. And there's also a feeling that I remember when AIDS, we first became aware of AIDS in the 80s and people were suffering so terribly, some people felt that if they called it gay cancer, as they called it for a while, or said it was mostly a problem with gays and needle users, which it was in the early stages in this country, if they said that, that people would not care about gays and junkies. So what they did was they said, well, this could move into the heterosexual population. It could get to you, so be careful. And I think that's the line you cross when you begin to say, this makes our case better, this is stronger, that's when you lose me. It's the same thing as talking to kids about drugs, all this stuff. If you tell them, you know, I'm not a big fan of marijuana, I don't think it's really a great idea, blah, 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 that seems cool. As soon as you say it automatically leads to heroin, you automatically lose your job, you automatically...
We got to break in here. Need a 110th nationwide caller now for your chance to win a Panasonic 42-inch plasma HDTV in this multi-city contest. Call 1-866-327-9946. 1-866-EASY-WIN.
Their heart's in the right place, but that's not enough. You have to always remember, even when your heart's in the right place, you got to be telling the truth. So I don't know. We've taken the whole hunk talking to you, Ryan. So thank you so much for calling. I'm going to hang up on you now. Okay, Ryan?
Okay, bud.
Cool. Thanks a lot, man. And we'll be back after this. I guess we're talking about science. It's okay to talk about science today.
Why not?
We can do that. Sure. 866-570-PEN, 7366. Science and how it's treated in the media. PenRadio@gmail.com, PenRadio.com. And with all those pens in there, you probably already guessed. This is Michael Goudeau and Penn Jillette on the Free FM, CBS Radio. That is the painful but almost healthy snapping of Penn Jillette here on Free FM, CBS Radio. As always, my dear friend Mike Goudeau is sitting across from me.
Lovely to see you.
I'm able to say as always now because I've forgotten the horrible time when you were away.
The month.
I've forgiven you now. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Jack was wonderful. Jack did a great job. We still missed you the whole time. We're talking about, you know, I saw Brian Wilson last night.
I know, you said that.
It's
that
so cool.
Amazing.
So cool. The Gibson tent here at CES had, I sat backstage with Joan Jett. And watched Brian Wilson on stage. And I got to tell you, seeing Brian go from, all his troubles and the sandbox and all the craziness to being up there on stage singing, you know, Wouldn't It Be Nice and Fun, Fun, Fun. And they also were singing Barbara Ann. And Barbara Ann is one of those songs that became a hit that I really love. It's a hit because it's so sloppy. And I can't think of, I can't hear Barbara Ann without thinking of Keith Moon, you know. Keith Moon, the drummer of The Who, was the biggest Beach Boys fan. And there's a great thing in The Kids Are All Right of Keith Moon singing Barbara Ann. And just so full of complete and utter joy that I sat there. And, of course, Skunk Baxter. Jeff Skunk Baxter of Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers and so on, and Ultimate Spinach. He also played with Ultimate Spinach. He was on stage with Brian Wilson, and when they were singing "Ba Ba 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 Baran," I'm sure because he's a military guy, he was singing "Bomb Bomb 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 Baran," "Bomb Bomb 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 Baran." But it was a wonderful experience to be sitting there, and they're going to give me a Les Paul. The Gibson people
Les
said
Paul.
Not Les Paul himself, a Les Paul guitar.
Sounded like you said Lesbo. I'm sorry.
Les Paul.
They're going to give you a Les Paul. Let's keep that clear.
They thought I will take a Lesbo any day, too. But Gibson thought it was embarrassing to them that I did not have a Gibson Les Paul guitar. So I guess they're going to deck it out the way...
Did you tell them how embarrassed I was that I didn't have one either?
Well, no, see, the problem is...
My name didn't come up yet.
You're embarrassed that you don't have one. They're embarrassed that I don't have one. So I'll have... just so you don't misunderstand, that doesn't mean I'm going to learn to play it. It just means I will have a Les Paul. It'll be in the band room, and I'll still play bass. When people come over, right now I got a couple of nice guitars, but now I have I got about five guitars, but now I'll have also a Les Paul. And maybe next time I go to New York, I'll get Les to sign it. How boss would that be?
That'd be boss?
That'd be pretty boss.
You'd sell it on eBay.
No, I wouldn't sell it on eBay. I wouldn't say, you mercenary rat.
I could be joking. I could be joking.
Okay. Be that way. We got a lot of calls. We should really get to them. We're talking about science. I got our friend Amy writes, my husband is a scientist, has worked with sheep brains and mice. When he gives a talk, the only thing I understand is Next slide, please. You got any good Gmails there before I grab a phone call?
Well, again, the letters about George Bush's speech are still coming.
Well, you know, there's a lot of information there.
We also have someone writing in saying the only time you do a time travel experiment, I'm actually listening live instead of on the podcast.
Well, let's go with, I'm going to take a phone call from Janda. Am I saying your name right, Janda?
Yes, you are, actually. You,
Janda, not Janda?
Janda. Like
yeah, Janda is too close to jaundice, right?
Yeah, or so, John. And it's like, it's funny because people call me Janda, or they're like, they'll be expecting a man to like raise their hand or something, and I'm like, my name's Janda, sir. Yeah.
Well, I have kind of a woman's name, so I feel your pain.
No, you don't. It's a very, very manly name.
Pen? Yeah.
You were talking to my mother before she died, weren't you? My mom would always try to claim that Pen was a masculine name, but I was named after my grandmother, who was named Penny, so it's not that masculine. But go on, Janda. What do you want to say, Janda? What do you want to say about science?
Well, first of all, can I just say that I love you so much? I really do. You've been like a part of my life, like since I can remember.
We always have time for that. Always have time.
I'm sure
for
you
that.
Do. But like, seriously, you're one of my heroes. It's
thank you so much. Thanks.
It's like whenever I had my art classes or whatever, my art teacher actually showed you and Teller when you did the line. The big
live
video?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was like thrilled. I was like, that's Penn freaking Teller, man.
We did a, he's, you know, he was going to change his name legally to freaking Teller. You know, because the no first name thing is so annoying. It was going to be Penn Jillette and freaking Teller. But we went back to the Penn and Teller. Yeah, we did those. You know, we did those things. That was like the late 80s. We did a series of educational films for grade school kids. Did you see this in grade school?
No, I saw you actually in ninth grade, but I saw Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I knew exactly who you were when I saw that, and I was like, as early as I get with you. And it was like, well, I remember like seeing stuff like, you know, like seeing you like on like, you know, different things, you know, like, you know, magician shows, and you were one of the famous magicians.
Well, thanks so much. But what's up with the science thing?
Oh, well, it's like the whole, I don't know. Science is like both ways for me. It's like they help you out, but nowadays they're just doing stuff for like, you know, not so, you know, I don't know, just reasons that really aren't necessary. Like, well, a diet patch? Come on, man. The only diet patch you need is one to go over your mouth. I mean,
yes, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, there was that great quote that we still haven't found where it's from that Godot said, that science is not a smorgasbord. You're not talking about technology here. You're talking about science. And, pure science, the reason, what drives pure science is the thirst for knowledge. And that knowledge will lead you everywhere, and you can't just pick and choose. So what you're talking about, I think, is that technology may be going in the wrong direction, but you're not really talking about science. Because I don't think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but my feeling is that our knowledge of the world around us and the knowledge about biology and astronomy and everything is all for the pure knowledge of it, just to know more about our world.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then we decide how the technology is used.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. It's just, I don't know. I think that, like, nowadays, like, science is getting more into technology. It's more about technology than
I think there's just as much pure science going on. It's probably more pure science than there's ever been. And even on technology, you know, I don't think, you know, we make this comparison. It was an article in Slate that was so interesting. But, you know, we have these unbelievable sex drives. And the way to solve the sex drive problem, we don't want to procreate or we don't want to have disease, is with the technology of condoms, which is a technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same thing, if people don't want to be fat, trying to use willpower to hold down a basic need like that is a very, very difficult thing. And I don't think there's any sort of puritanical thing that you have to get thin on your own. I think if they come up with a patch that makes people thinner or changes the chemistry somewhat, I'm all for it. Anything you can do to help people.
Well, I don't know. I just think that, like, you know, the basic, you know, going out, like in one of your other shows, somebody said something about going out and hunting for your food. You know, that was like, hey, why not, you know?
Well,
I mean, get out there and do something, you know?
I'm all for that, and I think it's great. But I'm just saying, any help, anything you can get to make people a little happier, however that happens, is fine with me.
I agree. I mean, I'm not saying that if it happens, I'm not going to take it. I'm a big hypocrite myself. But, you know?
I'm afraid we all are once in a while. But thank you so much for calling, Janda, and thank you for all your kind words. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I get a little embarrassed. But believe me, it made me feel good. Thank you so much, Janda.
Thank you.
So
I went to Emeralds last night here in Vegas, and man, did I want a patch. I want a patch so that I'm not suffering today because, man, they had some good bacon.
Yeah, what are you talking about with this bacon?
I don't know how they did this, and perhaps this is part of the science show or not. They cooked a piece of bacon in a way that it was kind of thick sliced. The outside was crunchy like regular bacon, but the inside was just goo.
Like fat?
Like just the bacon fat, yeah.
Like raw bacon fat with crispy on the outside?
It was cooked.
And what dish was this? Was this just bacon?
No,
or was
no.
there some dish?
You know, it came with a little piece of scallop, and you know, it's pretty spectacular. I'm kind of out of breath still. It was delightful.
What is it, Adam Carolla, that says whenever you put bacon on anything, you're apologizing for the food you put it on? That you should just have the pure bacon?
Well, this would have done it. This was a pure bacon. This was a spectacular.
You know, I'm a guy that likes bacon.
I know. That's why I bring it up. That's why I mentioned it.
You're talking to a bacon-loving guy.
You're not a Bacon of the Month guy, though, are you? We're not. You
know, no, we're not.
We're in Vegas.
No, we're not.
You can't send Vegas.
bacon
through the mail.
It shows up in your mailbox. I wanted to get another call in here because at least we can talk about bacon when we're off the air. We can go, bacon is so good. Let's talk to Stephen. What's up, Stephen? We're talking about bacon, so we're cutting into your time. What's up?
Hey, I love talking about bacon because it's nature's most perfect food.
It certainly is. It's the candy of meat.
Exactly. I was just calling because earlier in the show, you posed a question to the writer for the researchers about limiting research on ethical grounds,
mm-hmm.
and you said that you didn't think that was a good idea.
I agree, yeah.
And I can understand that because I do agree with you that research can be an end in itself.
Uh-huh.
I just object to the idea that imposing limitations is intrinsically wrong. And there are concepts that I don't feel should be researched, and I'm not saying that my concepts are the ones that should be limited, but what I'm saying is there should be a potential to say no if a concept for research came up that everyone agreed was beyond the scope of reason.
I want to just say, so we have the words clear here, that limitations on experiments that are immoral, like you certainly can't abuse children to see what happens with child abuse.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yes, well, certainly for that. But I'm talking about limiting the gathering of knowledge because the knowledge we may reveal maybe knowledge we don't want to know. That's what I was saying is wrong. But certainly there are many, many experiments. As a matter of fact, all the good experiments are immoral.
I can agree with that. Yeah. That was just the distinction I wanted made.
Well, it's a very important one, and thanks a lot for catching us on that, because it's important to make that clear that there are a lot of experiments that are immoral because of what the experiment would be, but not immoral in the knowledge that we would get. This ties in with, like, should we use the results of Mengele's experiments that he did in the Nazi? We get some noise in that line. But, you know, whether we should use the science that we got from Mengele.
Right.
And it becomes not a practical moral issue because the science that Mengele did was awful. He gave us no information whatsoever. He was not a scientist. He was not learning anything. He was just torturing Jews. So that isn't an issue. But it is possible in the future that some very, very bad person will do immoral experiments that are just awful and evil, but the science that comes out of it will be good. And my answer would be, use the knowledge we get, no matter where we get it, because otherwise all that suffering has been done even more in vain. It's obviously in vain and obviously wrong. This is Penn Jillette and Mike Goodell. We're chatting, and you know, this is the awful thing. We talked about really important, heavy issues that really matter about morality and science, and yet what I'm thinking about, bacon and Brian Wilson. I just want to put on the Beach Boys, fry up some bacon, and sit in my sandbox and enjoy myself. Penn Jillette, Mike Goodell, it's Free FM. It's always free.